Blog Talk Radio.
Interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know that we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth about what's really going on here in this crazy, crazy world? So welcome to the 587th edition of SDG, Sola Dea Gloria. And the title of today's message is 2023 Endgame Update Number 3. And a bit later in this message, folks, we're going to tie it all into the ominous parallels between today and back in the days of Noah. You know, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 24, verse 37, but as the days of Noah, that's Noah, were, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. So I hope you stay tuned to learn how we may be literally sitting on the precipice of the second coming of Jesus, because the signs are all around us, folks, from the world's secular philosophy to its sexual perversion. And then there's the scientific progress that Daniel told us about, and the social plagues all sandwiched in between. But the bottom line, all signs point to Jesus' soon return. So as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. We're God's people just passing through. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this Luciferian all-out war on humanity. And remember, folks, how did it start? Well, it all started with that lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. And as we do every week, let's look at something from last week's episode before we get in our past episodes. Now, you know, the years have been getting crazier and crazier ever since Trump got into office. And I do believe that's controlled opposition at this point. But, you know, that's a story for another day. What we need to do right now is just stay on top of all this. And I had a clip I forgot to play last week for you, folks. So before we get into the review from last week, what I'd like to do is look at this most traumatizing events from the second quarter of 2022, presented by none other than J.P. Sears.
Democracy is not perfect. It's never been good.
That sums up 2022 pretty well.
Good evening, and welcome to our Year in Review special report. 2022 was the year that we normalized drag shows for kids. We're making our ancestors proud as we complete year 3 of the first 15 days to slow the spread. 2022 has been the incestuous birth child of mother corruption and her brother gaslighting. It's been a magnificent year thanks to our benevolent globalist leaders that sign my paycheck while enriching your life with premium levels of inflation, unifying levels of division, satiating levels of food shortages, and a securely wide open border. We'll also fondly remember 2022 as the year that young people started dying suddenly from a condition known as died suddenly. So tonight, we're going to take a nostalgic walk down memory lane to re-traumatize you with the top stories from 2022. The year started with a frog sitting in a pot of hot water on the stove. Where did the frog end up? Stay tuned to find out. Story from April. A federal judge ruled that Biden's air travel mask mandate is illegal, and accordingly, the mask mandate was dropped immediately. As passengers began raw-dogging the air with their bare-ass faces, the devastating results on public health were that death and disease did not rise, but people's happiness did. In our eyes, both terrible results. In May, we said goodbye to Lucifer's sister, who was working as the White House press secretary, Jen Psaki. With a Hillary Clinton level of likability, Psaki was replaced by Karine Jean-Pierre, who specializes in being diversity. Through hard work and dedication to doing her job well, the sequel to Jen Psaki has since proven to be just as likable, but even more Pinocchio-like than Jen. However, The misogynists of this nation, which includes all men, have been delighted because Karine Jean-Pierre is at least a lot better looking than Paiseki and her hideous red hair. In June started off with a bang as the documentary What is a Woman was released. This dangerously hateful film single-handedly eliminated all the safe space in the world as it posed common sense questions to people with no common sense. Though no one with blue hair has figured out what a woman is since, everyone else erroneously believes it is simply an adult female. And accordingly, later in the month, history was made when the George Soros-backed Judge Ketanji Jackson became the first black woman sworn into the Supreme Court who doesn't know what a woman is. This event helped us learn that the three most important qualifications for being hired by the Biden administration are not knowing what a woman is, not knowing what the Constitution is, and not knowing where Epstein's client list is. Speaking of which, June saw Ghislaine Maxwell become the first person ever convicted of trafficking minors to literally no one, apparently. We at the media, along with our sponsors, appreciate her keeping her mouth shut so we can continue protecting the guilty from the innocent. And June closed out with a tremendous performance from President Biden, complete with shaking hands with air again, getting lost on stage, calling on a dead congresswoman, getting lost on stage again, shaking hands with even more air, and then celebrating a job well done by spiking himself like a football right into the ground as he fell off his bike. And not much happened.
And that's 2022, second quarter, folks. I'm telling you, 2023 is only going to get crazier. Just last week, we heard from Clay Clark about the central bank digital currency, the quantum dot, and the quant, as they all relate to the jab. Edited that down to about a minute and 45 seconds. That was a rather long one last week, and if you didn't hear it, go back and listen to it, folks. But I'd like to play just some of the high points where he had his monologue. Let's have a listen.
All right, Aaron Antis, we're going to really tap into the wisdom of today's guest.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about a subject that I've been diving into for the last couple weeks here. And I'll tell people why. The folks at MIT, they're rolling out this thing called the CBDC. So you go, you just type in MIT and then CBDCs, MIT. You look, there's an MIT lab. There they are.
Mm,
and
yeah.
They're rolling out central bank digital currencies.
That is definitely on the MIT website right there.
And you look and you go, wait a minute, the MIT's rolling out the CBDCs. Okay, the central bank digital currencies. And then you say, isn't that the same MIT lab that's rolling out the quantum dot?
Mm.
You know, where you can store someone's vaccine records and other financial information under the skin?
That is also on the MIT website.
And I start to go, well, then I have like Liz Crokin on my show, and Liz is talking about the corruption of Epstein, and I'm going, didn't Epstein and Gates fund the same MIT lab that made the CBDCs and the quantum dot? And I'm going, wait a minute.
Mm.
And then I start going, wait. What's the name of the new currency again? It's called the quant. What? It's called the quant is the name of the new central bank digital currency. That's the technology that will be used, the quant.
That's a kind of a coincidence.
The quant. So there's
similar.
A quantum dot that goes under the skin. It's developed by MIT.
It's probably just a coincidence.
The CBDCs are developed by MIT. They're both funded by Epstein and Gates. And so I thought, you know what, before I pass out or run into the woods and cry, I thought I would interview today's guest. So Dr. Judy Mikovits, welcome on to the Thrive Time Show. How are you?
So do you remember that from last week, folks? Well, right after Clay's rant, okay, I mean, I'm talking like the day after this came out, the Daily Mail over in the UK publishes this article titled, "The Quantum Apocalypse is Just Years Away." That's what experts say, at least. So it almost seems like this is all scripted. Kabuki theater, so to speak. You know, this article talks about the quantum apocalypse that could tear open everything from internet banking to government secrets and everything in between, just years away. And the fear is brought to focus now because of this paper that's published by the Chinese researchers working on quantum computers. Now, this technology has been under development by Google and IBM and many others. In fact, IBM actually has a quantum computer now. But there's a guy named Tim Callahan.
He's the Chief Experience Officer. Boy, isn't that an interesting title, Chief Experience Officer at cybersecurity company Setico, warned to the Daily Mail that these quantum computers, which, although in a primitive state, are going to make the encryption we currently use today obsolete. Now, the way this encryption technology works today is you have both a public key and a private key that protects your information online, whether it's your smartphone, some kind of tablet device, a laptop, a PC, a Mac, whatever. So these encryption codes can't be hacked by the current technology because it would take about 300 trillion years to crack the code by just running random numbers. But these new machines, instead of just counting zeros and ones with packets of either light or electrons, these new machines are going to use a single particle of light, hence the term quantum. And they're going to be able to not only do zeros and ones, but they can also do what they call the in-between, or I guess a half. And they do that by setting it both at one and zero at the same time. So 0 + 1 / 2 = 1/2. So these new machines will be able to crack these encryption codes rather quickly, obsoleting all of our online technology. So they've been around for a while. In fact, back in 2021, IBM's Osprey computer had what they call 400 qubits. Now, we typically report computer speeds in terms of MIPS, or million instructions per second. So this is up there orders of magnitude faster. And the experts are predicting that this hacking ability by these quantum computers to obsolete our encryption keys could be where they need to be within the next 8 to 20
years. Really?
Yeah, Alvin, really? Really? So in my humble opinion, the timing of all this is extremely suspicious, folks. Think about it. They're setting everyone up. I really, truly believe that. And then the Daily Mail reports this, and the WEF diplomats are sitting over in Davos with all their crazy ideas, talking with the fascist companies and all the trade representatives with their assertive campaign to save the world. This all came out same time. They're trying to convince the world right now that it's critical to work with them and their state-owned companies. Why? To save the world and to reshape the future with all the economic and political baggage that comes along with it. Now think about it. What's in it for you and me? Who benefits? Well, certainly not us. You know, I see all of this as the old proverbial silk glove covering the iron fist. In fact, I'm thinking they're going to use this grave security risk posed by these new quantum computers to just hack all of our private information from economics and finance to health. That's going to force us to take what's known as that quantum dot that Clay was talking about, the mark, literally the mark of the beast. Isn't this ominous? Doesn't this sound like what St. John told us about in Revelation? Well, these are like the days of Noah, and we're going to see more of that later in the show. And one more thing before we move on. Remember last week we talked about the Frankfurt School and Common Core in our Back to the Future section? We had this man, a great researcher named Armando Escalante, present all the links, connecting the dots, all the way back from the Sabbateans up to what we have going on with Common Core right now. Well, just listen to this modified version to remind yourself, and then I want to make a few comments before we get into the freaky, deaky news.
It's philosophy. I know I'm moving along pretty quick here, but there's a lot to cover. It's very important to understand this. Okay. This is from an article from the Fidelio magazine written in 1992, and this is probably the best description in a very short form of what they concluded at that meeting. George Lucas, who was one of the main thinkers, and they followed his thought, he said this. He said, Lucas identified that any political movement capable of bringing Bolshevism to the West would have to be, in his words, demonic. It would have to possess the religious power which is capable of filling the entire soul. However, Lucas suggested that such a messianic political movement could only succeed when the individual believes that his or her actions are determined not by personal destiny, but the destiny of the community in a world that has been abandoned by God. That is what they concluded, that these people that were in the Frankfurt School were all German intellectuals, some Russians, they were all Marxists. Lucas hated God. Every single one of those members in the Frankfurt School despised Christianity, despised everything that it stood for, and despised God. So this is what they concluded. Further, the problem was that as long as the individual had the belief or even the hope of belief that his or her divine spark of reason could solve the problems facing society, then that society would never reach the state of hopelessness and alienation, which Lucas recognized as a prerequisite for social revolution. So what is he saying? He's saying that you have to bring Bolshevism to the West, you have to make it a godless society.
So, how do you make it a godless society? Well, I talked about the Frankfurt School's critical theory and mentioned that it's all tied into entertainment. If you don't remember that, go back and listen to last week's episode and focus on the Back to the Future segment near the end. So this process that was developed by the Sabbateans, picked up by the Frankists, and then brought into the Frankfurt School and brought over to Columbia University, Guido Emilio, we learned all that from him last week. This process has developed critical theory, which led to Common Core. And it's taken us down this rabbit hole to the decivilization and the collapse of Western society. So they're using education and the media and entertainment in particular to subjugate and subvert our culture and our very way of life. So I found this and I'd like to share it with you. And it's a criticism of the Sabbateans and their critical theory. Now it's coming at us from a normie perspective, but there's really some good information here concerning how they're going to create this godless society. And part of it is through entertainment. So let's have a listen to this criticism of the Frankfurt School's critical theory. It's about 6.5-7 minutes long.
Criticism of the Frankfurt School and the legacy of critical theory. I'm D. Elizabeth Klasko, and I'm your lecturer for this series. There were many criticisms of the Frankfurt School, but for our immediate purposes here, their condemnation and dismissal of popular culture made them appear elitist. In his essay on the fetish character in music from 1938, Theodore Adorno argued that with regard to popular music, the industrialization of production, lack of ingenuity, standardization, reliance on formulas, as well as the commercialization of music consumption, had a negative influence on all aspects of musical form. He wrote, "Music for entertainment seems to complement the reduction of people to silence, the dying out of speech as expression, the inability to communicate at all. It inhabits the pockets of silence that's developed between people molded by anxiety, work, and undemanding docility. Everywhere it takes over unnoticed the deadly sad role that fell to it in the time and the specific situation of the silent films. It is perceived purely as background." Adorno went on to argue that, through use and exchange, the masses become defined by the products they consume. Adorno uses popular music as an example, but contemporarily, popular music today is an exemplar of Adorno's argument. In the case of popular music, just as Adorno argued, when one particular song or series of songs scored a great success, hundreds of others sprang up imitating the successful one. Adorno also noted that the most successful hits, types, and ratios between elements were imitated, and the process culminated in the crystallization of standards. Under centralized conditions such as exist today, he argued, these standards have become frozen. So, the process of standardization, laid out by marketing, promotion, record companies, and the desire to make a hit, becomes the end goal of a competitive process that ultimately leads to standardization. Explaining how it is that consumers keep purchasing and coming back for more products promulgated by the culture industry, Adorno extolled that consumers' creativity is so dulled that they look to fill their brief leisure time with entertainment that requires little in the realm of effort or independent thinking. The product, according to Adorno, is predictable and easy to digest. To the critical theorists, the massive millions of individuals purchasing commodities were powerless to withstand the culture industry's machinations. Indeed, the critical theorists believed that consumers were conditioned as children with no capacity for rational thinking of their own accord, no hope of reprieve, doomed forever as passive dupes of capitalism's absolute power in work and leisure. Or, as Adorno put it, if nobody can any longer speak, then certainly nobody can any longer listen. Now, a number of critics took issue with the critical theorist approach to looking at a monolithic popular culture. Led by people like the media scholar David Hesmadaj, these critics developed what they called a cultural industries approach, which rejected the economic determinism that was embedded in the critical theorist's conceptualization of standardization. The critics emphasized the way cultural artifacts are contested throughout their creation, at the moment of conception, throughout the production process, and on to the audience, and back again to producers. These symbol creators, as Hesmadaj elucidates, should not be looked upon for their production expertise alone. Indeed, the class, race, sexual, and gender inequalities inherent in those experiences reveal the struggle inherent within the capitalist-driven cultural industries and these experiences. The question should be, who is in control? And that should be taken into account with any meaningful critique of the process. Hesmadaj argued that owners in the cultural industries are not in complete control of what gets produced. Indeed, symbol creators, according to Hesmadaj, have some creative license in the creation and production process, which gives them more control of the process than workers in other industries. Contrary to Adorno and Horkheimer's pessimistic conceptualization of the culture industries, critical scholars have concluded today that the impact of symbol creators allows scholars to direct their attention away from the way capitalism impacts popular culture production and indeed consumption to the way it manages, organizes, and provides the conditions within which creativity can be realized. In this way, there is a realistic potential for struggle within the creative process of the cultural industries and the potential for liberatory action. The critics particularly singled out Adorno with searing and mocking critique because of what they saw as his flawed conceptualization of the popular. For them, Adorno's value-laden popular-serious distinction was overly broad in scope, and he appeared to them to be woefully uninformed of his biases. Indeed, as an aficionado of European classical music, Adorno failed to acknowledge striking standardization in both production, reproduction, and also performance in that domain. But the legacy of the critical theorists is that their work animated efforts toward critically examining the nature of the high-low culture dichotomy and a more thorough examination of the working class that took into account the various social and historical locations. As revealed by the works of the cultural critical theorists like Raymond Williams, Richard Hogarth, Stuart Hall, Paul Gilroy, and others, classifying popular culture into merely good versus bad dismisses or ignores completely organically produced art, It not only eliminates audience agency and the possibility of struggle, but fails to acknowledge the value-laden arc of their endeavor. I'm the Elizabeth Glasgow. Thanks for watching. Please like and subscribe.
Now, I know there was a lot there, folks, and some of you may be frustrated with these long clips I play, but we have been reduced down to a sound bite society, which can be manipulated and turned on a dime by methodologies adopted by, or I should say perfected and then adopted through the Tavistock media relationship. And you have to understand these things on a deep level. You know, I was listening to that, and he was talking about the standardization of music. It reminded me of a couple clips I found years ago. Actually, Sister Kathy found them, that talked about the formulaic methodology employed in popular music. And that made me think of Hell's Bells. Maybe that's some info for a future episode. But right now, folks, we have to keep moving, and it's time for our Freaky Deaky News Update. And as we do every week, folks, let's get started with our coronavirus heist update. Sorry about that, folks. Had to shut that off. As we do every week, we get started with these sudden adult death updates. And last week, you probably all heard the tragic news that Elvis's only child and heir to the entire Graceland fortune and his estate, Lisa Marie Presley, died suddenly of a heart attack at 55. Now, I didn't report on it last week because I wasn't sure of her vax status, but now I am. Newspunch.com reports that about a year ago, Lisa Marie was actively promoting the COVID vaccines, and she said she had no regrets about getting hers. And there's an image out there. You could actually read her quote. And then I checked to see what the fact checkers were doing, and over at Snopes, no evidence. Lisa Marie Presley's cause of death was COVID-19 vaccines. So they go in and talk about this conspiratorial Twitter user who began to speculate right after her death that perhaps it was the booster shot. Now, says, however, these rumors are completely baseless, as there's absolutely no credible evidence to support these claims. Then it goes on to bash died suddenly claims. And they're deeming this entire discussion of died suddenly concerning and linking to these jabs as nothing but mere conspiracy theory. Now, did you notice that term, conspiracy theory? You know, Snopes or however you say it, uses this to falsely claim that these COVID-19 vaccines have no relation to these sudden deaths. And they claim they've debunked other rumors in the past about these died suddenly claims, but they don't cite how. All they do is say, hey, we got others that are coming along with us in this group thing. People like Reuters and AP and factchecks.org and USA Today and PolitiFact and AFP, just to name a few. But they don't give you any proof. And then they go on to say, according to AP, the only currently known details about Presley's cause of death was that she had suffered a full cardiac arrest. You know, folks, it's happening more and more amongst people between the age of, say, 15 and 50. So that's the Snopes debunking article. Now, let's think critically for this for just a moment. How did this article actually debunk the died suddenly rumor or narrative or conspiracy, whatever you want to call it? Think about it. They didn't. Comes out from a BBC interview with cardiologist Dr. Asin Malhotra. Now, he's an expert in cardiology, focuses on the statin drugs, and this is a portion or a snippet taken out of this rather long interview on the BBC concerning health trends with regard to heart health. And in it, he says that there's a likely contributing factor to the excess deaths that are related to cardiovascular events, and he's linking it to the mRNA vaccine. And he's saying in this clip you're going to hear that it should be suspended immediately pending an inquiry. Let's have a listen to this clip.
Excellent. Says the cheap price of tablets.
Certainly during the pandemic or since the pandemic, there's been 30,000 excess deaths specifically due to coronary artery disease. That's my area of expertise. And they're trying to figure out what's causing it. Chris Whitty recently suggested that it could be because people weren't prescribed statins or blood pressure pills. But Carl Hedigan, that unfortunately, I've got respect for Chris Whitty, but I think he's mistaken here because analysis I've done, even Carl Hedigan, the director of the Center of Evidence-Based Medicine in Oxford, suggests that statin pills prescription hasn't reduced since the pandemic. So it's unlikely to be a cause. But what is almost certainly, and if you allow me to say this, LaQuesta, what my own research has found, and this is something that is probably a likely contributing factor, is that the COVID mRNA vaccines do carry a cardiovascular risk. And I've actually called for the suspension of this pending an inquiry because there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment about what's causing the excess deaths. Some of it will be ambulance delays. My own father, who was reported on BBC News in late 2021, I was the first to actually highlight the ambulance delays because my own father suffered a cardiac arrest at home and the ambulance took 30 minutes. And when his post-mortem came out, he had very severe coronary artery disease, which is unexplainable. I then published in a peer-reviewed journal, they accepted my findings that the likely cause of his death was two doses of the Pfizer mRNA vaccine he had 6 months earlier. So
can I
think there's lots of, yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry, I just want to jump in on that point. So what you're saying in terms of the mRNA link to cardiovascular risk, is that is a proven, it's been proven medically, has it, scientifically?
Yeah, for the question. So in medicine, you know, in any research that we do, it's very difficult to always be absolutely conclusive. So we go on licenses. And there are lots of data now. The highest quality data book called Randomized Controlled Trial Evidence. So there was a reanalysis in the Journal of Vaccine published recently where they found that the original trials of Pfizer and Moderna with mRNA vaccines showed, and I just want to put this in absolute terms because you don't want to scare people unnecessarily, but the absolute risk of serious adverse events was at least 1 in 800.
Okay.
And a lot of those are cardiovascular. And then you were more likely in those trials to suffer a serious adverse event than to be hospitalized with COVID early on. And I think the vaccine has certainly helped people who are high risk, but now we should be reassured that Omicron and what's circulating is really no worse than the flu, and this is really time to pause the vaccine rollout and to really investigate this problem.
Okay, so I just want to clarify one.
Wow. So people, normal, blue-pilled people, the normies, so to speak, you know, the non-participating players in terms of gaming technology, the NPPs, so the lies about the scamdemic and the death jab. They're starting to realize, hey, you know, not as many people, in fact, no more people died during the scamdemic. But now that we have the cure, this mRNA cocktail of whatever, you know, those inserts are still blank, folks. You don't even know what's being injected. But people are smart enough to relate cause and effect. They're seeing people that are getting jabbed, they're getting sick. Their immune systems are being compromised, and they're dying. Now, if that isn't bad enough, make sure you're sitting down and paying attention to this next 59-second clip. It's a TikTok video that's going viral about the dangers of these jabs.
Listen close. It's only 54 seconds long.
All right, Tip, this won't be up for long. Share as much as you can. Mike Eden, ex-chief scientist of Pfizer, has stated that it is now too late to save any person who has been injected with any COVID-19 vaccine. He urges those who have not yet been injected with the deadly compound to fight for the continuation of humans and the lives of their children. The world-acclaimed immunologist goes on to outline the process which he says will kill the vast majority of people now alive. Immediately on receipt of the first injection, around 0.8% of people die within 2 weeks. The survivors have a life expectancy of 2 years on average, but this is decreased with every top-up or booster injection. Down at the bottom, billions are already condemned to certain unchangeable and agonizing deaths. Each person who has received the injection will certainly die prematurely in 3 years is a generous estimate. Please share.
So there you have it. Now, don't despair. If you have been jabbed, stop getting jabbed. And if you have been jabbed, there is a possible workaround. Mike Adams reported this week that there are some published papers out now correlating the unwrapping and essentially the destruction of the spike proteins found in these jabs by the administration of a couple simple supplements that include NAC and licorice extract. So if you want to learn more about that, go over to the Health Ranger and check it out. But right now, we have to keep moving, and it's time for our Kabuki Theater update.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police report, the 2020 elections. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater in Japanese. Ka means salt. Bu means dance. Ki means steal from the verb. Kabu means to slant or to sway. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flatten the curve. The curve of the economy, stupid. Must slow down the velocity of money. Portal hyperinflate before we're done. Stealing it all. Trump, bad. Must go. Good is bad. Bad is good. Up is down. Light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for Agenda 2030 and the new world order. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
Now, I'm opening the Kabuki Theater segment with another COVID story. You may scratch your head and say, why? Why, Brokim? Why did you keep it in the old segment? Well, stay with me here, and you're going to see why. Over at J.D. Rucker's Substack page, on the 15th of January, he wrote a titled, Nearly a billion people in China have COVID now with 80% severe, and none of this makes any sense. And he opens up the article by saying, and I really like this line, there are known knowns, known unknowns, and unknown unknowns in this world. And the last one, the unknown unknowns, is where we stand with regard to the scamdemic and everything that's unfolding right now in China and everything else surrounding this whole big lie that was foisted upon we the people. Nothing that's happened over the last month, folks, month and a half maybe, has made any sense concerning what's going on in China. Nothing at all. And at this point, I'd have to agree with JD and say, I don't know what they're doing over there or what's going on with all this. Now, remember how China started all this. They had a zero COVID policy. And that prompted all sorts of mass protests after people were literally welded into their apartment complexes. The steel doors were welded shut to the steel frame. And the Communist Chinese Party or Chinese Communist Party saw this uprise amongst the people of China, something that really they can't control. We have to do that clip called Dots, and you'll see what I'm talking about. And then suddenly, the Chinese Communist government just inexplicably dropped the restrictions and essentially went to what you could call an all COVID policy. Get as many people sick as you can. And at first, it seemed to me that what they were trying to do is to teach the Chinese people, their subjects, a lesson by giving them what they were asking for, you know, freedom, no more lockdowns, and allowing them to get very sick because they haven't developed any kind of herd immunity to this pathogen. And then a few weeks later, come back and say, see, we told you freedom was overrated. We're going to reinstall all this restrictions. But that never happened. And now we're learning there's this massive surge over in China concerning these COVID infections to the tune of like 900 million people, with 80% of the cases as classified as severe. That's my thoughts exactly, Paul. So my knee-jerk reaction was, after I read JD's post, what? Now, my conclusion is an ominous one, folks, an ominous one for we the people and the freedoms of all the people of this world. To me, it's smelling like a coordinated effort between the Chinese Communist Party and these global elites that just met at Davos as they plan to launch another trigger event, perhaps to justify the adoption of the pandemic treaty. But whatever's happening, folks, it's not what we're being told, or not being told for that matter. So it's very easy to see, folks. It's very easy to see now for anyone who's paying attention that we are being manipulated by all of these news stories. They're being used to advance an agenda. Think about it like this. don't you think the vax nannies, people like Martha Stewart, who sold out to the jab, would be screaming about all this right now and pushing for the mask tyrants and the jab tyrants to even exert more power? So whatever's happening, folks, the mainstream media is reporting on this topic and everything that's going on in China right now as follows. That's pretty pathetic, isn't it? That silence simply reinforces my belief that this is all part of a greater globalistic plan. So why did I open up with it in the Kabuki Theater segment? Why? Well, remember what Kabuki stands for. The word, when written out, has three Japanese characters. Ka, meaning song, bu, meaning dance, and ki, meaning skill. And think about the critical theory of the Frankfurt schools. Think about the systemization of just about everything in our culture, from education to entertainment. All a big psyop, folks. So it's political theater, all about control. Think about what happened and how the whole thing was brought to us 2.5 years ago. The dire news coming out of China. People dropping dead in the streets. Streets patrolled by those hazmat-clothed police or whatever they were. It was all Kabuki theater, sucking the West into giving up their freedoms. That's the bottom line. And we're still dealing with it today, folks. All these years later. And here on SDG, we were telling you this was a scam from day one. You know, these global elite, the Sabbateans, know what's going on. And here's some proof on that. There's an article, Kirsch, his Substack page, that the FAA has quietly admitted that the EKGs of pilots are no longer normal. And that should make us concerned, folks. Very concerned. Did you even know about this? Well, Steve Kirsch reports that last October 2022, in the latest version of the FAA's guide for aviation medical examiners, they quietly widened the EKG parameters beyond the normal range. They went from a PR max of 0.2 to an unlimited value. Basically, they said, we're not going to look at your heart condition anymore. They didn't widen a little. They widened it a lot. And that was all done after the vaccine rollout.
What? Are you serious? Can I have some more coffee?
That's right, Paul. You heard that right. This is literally mind-blowing when you stop and think about it. They did it and hoped no one would notice. But some people did. Now, it worked for a while. Nobody caught it at first, but you can't hide these things forever. So just like people are catching on to the nefarious plans of the World Economic Forum and their Great Reset, and by the way, that used to all be spelled out over at weforum.org. And notice I said it was spelled out, because now the World Economic Forums begin to scrub their website of the very plans for their global enslavement that they were preaching 2.5 years ago. And this news coming out of the FAA is a tacit admission from the U.S. government that COVID vaccines have damaged the hearts of our pilots. And not just a few pilots, a lot of pilots, and a lot of damage. And this cardiac harm isn't limited only to pilots. My guess right now is that I'm going to say 50 million Americans have sustained some level of heart damage from this shot. Folks, that's a lot of people who are going to be very upset when they realize the vaccine has actually hurt them, and it hasn't helped them, and it hasn't helped mitigate the spread. You know, that herd mentality? People are dying more so from the cure than the disease. They've been made more likely to get COVID. They've needed more hospitalizations after getting the jab. More of them are dying from COVID after being jabbed. And there's so much heart damage right now, and you get that for no extra charge. But don't worry, you can't sue them. Remember, the big money lobbyists have fixed the law so that none of them can be brought up for the crimes that they've committed against humanity. I'm talking from the doctors to the drug companies to the government. They all have immunity. And why? Well, after all, you took Zane on your own free will. You weren't forced. You weren't coerced. Sure, you'd lose your job. You might not be able to travel. Maybe you can't visit your family. But you weren't coerced. You had a choice. Now, as I learn more, I'll keep you posted. Oh, and by the way, remember last week I talked about the IDC-10 codes? You know, those codes that are used to qualify and quantify each and every death? Well, get this. The IDC-10 code for elevated tropin level of unknown causes was changed back in October 2020. Now, the timing of this change on that IDC-10 code, that's what caught my attention. Was this mere coincidence, folks? Or was it more? I wonder. Remember that clip we played last week on the Coincidence Institute and coincidence theorists? I guess I'm a coincidence theorist.
Are you or a loved one suffering from a medical coincidence? You want proper medical care, but you don't want people sniffing around asking a whole bunch of questions about what might be causing your problem. At the Kauffman Institute for Coincidence, we won't look into the cause of your heart or other problem. We'll just fix it. That's right. We promise to only look at your symptoms. We won't get all curious looking for causes, because that could get your employer or your doctor into some legal hot water. And nobody wants that. At Kauffman, we understand that coincidence is now the leading cause of death.
Hey, we've got another coincidence over here.
If we want to operate at the speed of science, there's no time for looking for causes. No pesky questions about drugs or vaccines you may have been given. At Kauffman, we specialize in the effects and leave the causes to the conspiracy theorists. And let's be honest, we know the cause anyway. It was a coincidence, right? For each new patient, Kauffman's talented team of doctors strap on their blinders and look directly at the problem area, usually the heart, just like the CDC recommends. Our main campus now treats myocarditis, blood clots, heart arrhythmia, stroke, heart attack, magnetic skin, difficulty breathing, full body blisters and burning, convulsions, kidney failure, memory loss, cancer, sudden death, and much, much more. Give your coincidence the attention it deserves, but not the wrong kind of attention. At Kauffman. Schedule your appointment today at kauffmancoincidence.com and receive a doctor's note with a real science-y sounding explanation to provide to your anti-vax friends, proving to them it was definitely not the vaccine that caused your coincidence. Kauffman, because coincidences happen pretty much all the time.
Official medical coincidence partner of the NFL.
So there you have it. Coincidence, folks. So it's all simply coincidence. And anything more is conspiracy theory. Well, here's some more conspiracy theory for you, folks. You've got to wonder if these jabs had anything to do with the recent mess at Southwest Airlines. By every other excuse, that's the one that really makes sense. You know, Southwest had to cut 20,000 flights late last year. Now, it states that its goal is to hire 10,000 new workers. So you do the math, folks. Down, so to speak, by Southwest over the holidays was probably due to a shortage of pilots. You know, they need at least 30% more pilots. And they have to add about 9,600 pilots. But the problem is they can't find them. So once again, let's think critically. Just for a moment, if the death jab damaged pilots, then there's justification for autopilot, more AI. Remember I was telling you about the spy car that I got, Terry? That new Subaru Forester literally drives itself on the highway. Now, you don't want to take your hand off the steering wheel or take your eyes off the road. In fact, if you do, it sets off an alarm. But you can literally turn on the autopilot, so to speak. Put your hands on the bottom of the wheel, look forward, and it'll literally track so many car lengths behind the car in front of you and steer down the highway and brake when the car in front of you brakes. And that's AI, folks. So I think what they're going to do is enslave us and justify AI for more and more aspects in our life. And meanwhile, did you hear this clip? It was on the Maria Z Uncensored show. It was Alan Dana, a former pilot for Jetstar. That's a Singapore-based airline talking about the fact that all these global elitists, as they fly to their Davos meeting and jet set around the world, they're asking for unjabbed pilots. Can't make this
and
stuff up.
The U.S. Freedom Flyers, Josh Yoder, he's the head president of the U.S. Freedom Flyers. He said they're getting calls now from wealthy businessmen and companies to fly their executives around on business jets with unvaccinated crew. Now, they get the luxury of being able to choose because there are still a large amount of crew available in the United States who are not vaccinated because the companies they work for didn't mandate it. And
yeah.
These wealthy businessmen are requiring unvaccinated crew on their business. Now, passengers of an airline on an airline bought a ticket don't have that luxury. It's just like, okay.
Yeah, just like, okay. Now, the large commercial flights have a pilot and a co-pilot, so there's two capable on each flight, and the risk is more limited that you're going to have a pilot and a co-pilot pass out or die at the same time during takeoff and landing. That's the only truly critical time, because these large commercial aircraft actually autopilot, kind of like Terry's new car. But these private flights, along with all those small commuter flights, they're a different story. Now, here's a bit of humor in this next piece from the Babylon Bee before we get into our next serious story. You've heard of all the layoffs in the big tech sector, but did you ever wonder how an interview with one of these woke former Twitter employees might go? Well, that's exactly what the Babylon Bee depicts in this next hilarious parody. About a 3.5-minute clip. Take a listen.
Mr. Dunsinson?
Yeah, come on in. You know, you're 20 minutes late.
Yeah, at Twitter, we didn't have, like, start time. Schedules are a remnant of an oppressive colonialist regime.
Oppressive colonialist regimes? Okay. Well, look, the work here is pretty demanding. We need to find someone who can inspect all of our outgoing... Miss, are you okay?
I'm sorry. I'm not really used to bosses using trigger words like demanding and inspect and work.
But this is a job.
We don't say that either.
Then how do you get any work? How do you get any labor stuff production, the handwork, network, sorry, stuff done? How do you get any stuff done?
Us Threeps got tons of stuff done on Twitter.
Oh, okay. Well, what would you say you did there?
I was responsible for so much as a content moderation specialist. Some days during my afternoon cornhole sesh, I'd get a text telling me I had to ban someone.
So then you'd have to actually, like, walk over to your computer and ban them?
No. I would just hit a button on my phone, and then BAM! Babylon Bee, banned. Libs of TikTok, banned. Steve from Fruitport, Michigan, you know he banned. And then back to cornhole.
All right, well... What else did you do there?
Drank like a sailor. They had wine on tap, mimosas, a full microbrewery. They also had AA, which was kind of helpful for me. One day at a time.
Well, congratulations. So I think I've seen everything that I need to see. Did you have any questions for us?
Tons. Okay, first, you don't actually, like... expect me to come into the office, do you?
Well, how do you expect to get any work done, labor done, stuff done at the factory without coming into the factory?
Oh, so this is like a job. Yeah, that might be a deal breaker for me. Also, I didn't notice any meditation rooms when I came in. Do you guys have any gurus on site, or is it more like a BYOG type situation?
BYO what?
Also, I didn't see a QR code for your lunch menu, but I assume your shrimp is non-GMO and cage-free.
Shrimp? Where'd you get shrimp? We don't have any shrimp.
Hey, sorry to interrupt, boss. Pneumatic drill is on the fritz again. I need to go pick up some parts. I'll be back in 5.
Ugh! What was on his hand?
It was grease.
How did it get there?
Because he works, does stuff, engages in manual labor.
Okay, that's it. I can't do this. I'm sorry, Mr. Dunsenson. We've decided to go in a different direction.
All right, well, I'm sorry to hear that, miss.
No! 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 No!
Hey, boss, she gone?
Yep.
You thinking what I'm thinking?
Rooftop cornhole sesh?
I got the mimosas.
Are you a purveyor of fine goods and a patron of quality entertainment? If so, be sure to like, subscribe, and comment to support the fine institution known as the Babylon Bear. And if you don't subscribe, you must be one of those unfortunates who can't even afford an in-house sommelier. Speaking of which, Reginald, bring the 1906 Charlie Moore Kiss Kiss Yourself, sir.
You know, sometimes humor is the best way to get a point across, and I thought the Babylon Bee did such a great job there. The way to systematically destroy a culture is to cut off their wealth production means. And the service sector doesn't create wealth. You know, every time somebody manufactures, every time somebody farms, every time somebody does something with their labor, producing substance, they're creating wealth. Folks, I just want to thank Elon Musk for returning all those people to their rightful positions as baristas or gas station attendants or whatever. But right now, on a much more serious note, did you hear about the whistleblower that's revealing what's behind these mass attacks on U.S. food facilities all around the world? The Rare Foundation has posted a clip of a man named Dr. Huff, a whistleblower, who's pulling the covers off all of the nefarious stuff that's going on in the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's food and agriculture sector, basically in this one group called the Critically Assessment Tool. And he gets into rather great detail here. He's being interviewed by Emerald Robinson. So let's have a listen. This is about a 9.5-minute clip, so stay with me, folks.
More than 150 firefighters wrapped out 2022 by fighting a massive fire at a large grain storage facility in Hemlock, Michigan. Investigators estimate that the fire destroyed 3 million bushels of corn. No one was working at the time, and no one, fortunately, was hurt. This follows a suspicious trend, however, we saw throughout the year of 2022, from Arizona to New York. Last April in Oregon, a fire destroyed the headquarters of the largest independent food distributor in the country called Azure Standard. It was a huge fire, but it was just the beginning. Take a look at all of these headlines. Overall, there were several dozen fires across the country last year where large amounts of food were destroyed while no one was on ship. The exact number is unclear, but it's estimated there were as many as 90 food processing plants or farm fires as of last summer. Dr. Andrew Huff says he has a possible explanation for these suspicious fires. Huff said he had government information simulating what would happen if there was an attack on the food supply. It analyzed which food and agriculture facilities were the most vulnerable. You might recall that Huff has been a repeated target by Michigan police and the federal government since he's the EcoHealth Alliance whistleblower. Huff says that's why the FBI confiscated those hard drives that supposedly had information on how the U.S. government coordinated attacks on U.S. food supply. Huff believes they dumped this data and it's being used to attack American farms and food processing plants. And joining me now to discuss this is Dr. Andrew Huff himself, the EcoHealth Alliance whistleblower and the former vice president of EcoHealth Alliance. He's also a bioterrorism expert, veteran, and scientist. Additionally, he's also the author of the new book we've been sharing with you, The Truth About Wuhan, How I Uncovered the Biggest Lie in History. Thank you for being here, Dr. Huff. You know, we're always talking about EcoHealth Alliance, in the COVID cover-up, and vaccines, but this is an extremely important issue and one people might not realize you have knowledge on. Tell me how you came by this information, this simulation, these documents. And I'll say, pre-COVID, we saw government entities, NGOs, et cetera, doing simulations on what a coronavirus epidemic would look like. So it's a familiar story. But tell us about these documents, how you came to them, and your knowledge of them.
Well, you surprised me. I thought I was here to talk about COVID. So sure, let's talk about the food and ag attacks.
So those documents and the modeling and simulation. So when I earned my PhD, it's sort of strange. So I was actually in public health, in epidemiology, doing infectious disease training in my coursework. But I actually worked at a research center that was national security focused. Bioterrorism and agroterrorism would be a good way of summarizing the type of work that was done at this research center. That research center was funded by the Department of Homeland Security. One of the conditions of me receiving my PhD, or what I sort of negotiated, is that I wanted to receive a full data set to analyze to get through the program faster. You can get through a PhD much quicker if you don't have to collect a ton of primary data. So it really cut down the amount of time that it would take for me to complete the program. Well, it turns out that the Department of Homeland Security had this data set called FASTCAT. FASTCAT stood for Food and Agriculture Systems Criticality Assessment Tool. It was developed by scientists at the University of Minnesota, many prominent scientists there, and leaders in national security in academia, but then also in partnership with different federal government agencies, mostly at the Department of Homeland Security and other three-letter agencies. The data set was handed to me, and it was my job to analyze these data to see if there's any flaws in the system or the methodology of how they're collecting these data, to see how if the system could be improved, and then see if there are any other trends and really just pick this apart and see what we could do with these data. Well, I actually published in all this work. So if you were to go look at Google Scholar and type in FASCAT, FASCAT, a few articles would pop up. And the United States government, with all the different state governments, analyzed probably 70, 80% of United States food and agriculture systems. That includes the facilities, the transportation, the retail distribution, even all the way down to restaurants. So I had all these data. And after I left and completed my PhD at the University of Minnesota, I went on to Sandia National Laboratories, where a portion of my portfolio of work was actually analyzing these data and then further developing models and simulations to test attacks through the system. So really what these data were and these models and analysis that I was working on was a roadmap to attack critical infrastructures in the United States. You could even get into power, electricity, other critical dependent systems or interdependent systems. So fast forward to 2019, when I start being harassed by the U.S. government and the Michigan State Police, the hard drive containing these data go missing. Then fast forward a year or two into this mess, and there's been a number of attacks. I think globally there's been roughly around 200 attacks. I'd have to go check. In the United States domestically, I think there's been somewhere between 130 to 150 attacks now. And I actually analyzed the attacks against the most critical systems in my data, in this data set, because I had a backup of it. And it's a perfect match. I mean, you run something called a t-test on this to make a comparison. And it had a T-score of, I think, 100,000 or 200,000, something ridiculous. That I had never seen something so predictive or such a strong correlation in my life. And I immediately reported this to the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI. And this was while the harassment was going on that I was experiencing, all the crimes that the government was committing against me. I never received a response back, if you can believe that.
The coincidences are just uncanny, right? Like you said, statistically, that would just be impossible. Also, with so many attacks, by now, wouldn't the government have found who it was if there was an effort to do so? And if it's not, I don't even know how to put it. Would they not have found the perpetrator if it was outside of some coordinated entity?
I don't know. It's hard to say. So in these types, when you're dealing with this level of sophistication attack, so first of all, there were only two people in the world that had, quote unquote, the keys to de-identify the data. I was one of them, and my mentor, Colonel John Hoffman, who still works with the Department of Homeland Security, he's semi-retired, had the other set of keys. So these keys and the data could have been intercepted in communications when we shared them back and forth via different government systems and non-government systems. These data weren't classified because they were developed in academia. But if these would have been developed purely in by the government, this would have been classified as top secret without a doubt. But because academics did the work, it wasn't classified. Now, so who could do this? Well, you know, it could be an inside job. You could always say it's a false flag from someone like the CIA. I don't believe that. I don't want to believe that. My belief is that a state-sponsored actor or a group of people like the World Economic Foundation have got a hold of these data, and they could be working with a number of groups that are aligned against the United States to attack our infrastructure. It's actually fairly easy to attack the food and agriculture supply, and this has been our concern for decades now with food and agriculture. As you can see, you know, they don't have the guns, gates, and guards type of security. You can pretty easily walk into food facilities, unfortunately. Security has improved. The physical security has improved in a number of these facilities. But you can also attack these facilities through cyber attacks. And that's one of the big concerns that they're working on right now. So I know for a fact that the FBI has tried to investigate some of these different terrorist, I think they're terrorist attacks, but some of these attacks. And I know that the food industry has been trying to investigate that. And they're not going anywhere. And if one food facility burnt down, you could say, well, that was just, you know, random. If it was 10, you could mm-hmm. say that was random too. But the highly targeted nature of these food facilities and how they correlate with these data that were stolen, this is obviously someone who is well-resourced doing this, someone who knows what they're doing. They could have generated the assessment or the analysis on their own independently. I think that'd be very difficult and highly unlikely. So there's definitely a state-sponsored actor or a group of well-sponsored individuals who are doing this. It could be both, and they could be aligned.
So did you hear that, folks? There could be a state-sponsored actor. Now, what you heard there is some well-known information if you're in the truther movement. But when the normies start finding this out, and when they start to connect the dots and understand that there's a systematic takedown underway of our food supply, look out. You know, what needs to happen is for one of the patriots in the House, one of those 20 that stood up to McCarthy, to bring this issue to the floor of the people's house. So now the deep state plan has been revealed, planned by them to deprive us of our food. The stocking up is crucial, folks. And all points considered, I'm telling you, it's a prudent course of action. So make certain that you have some supplies and make certain that you can weather all the storms that they're going to throw at us, folks, because they're coming. But right now we have to keep moving. It's time for our newest segment, Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road.
Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Follow, 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 follow the Yellow Brick Road.
So remember, folks, for the love of money is the root of all evil. And if you just follow the yellow brick road, the money trail, yellow representing gold, you'll see who's behind the curtain. So Operation Sandman, if you haven't heard about it, is the plan to destroy the petrodollar, and it's underway now. The Saudis have announced that they're willing to settle oil contracts, currencies other than the U.S. dollar. And then you have the hype all over right now for central bank digital currencies. Remember what Clay Clark talked about? Well, the New York Times and Forbes and others, mainstream financial journalists, you want to call them that anymore, are starting to talk about CBDCs. And what they're doing is they're confusing it. They're muddying the waters. They're trying to equivocate it to cryptocurrencies, which it's not. And then how about the latest World Economic Forum meme? You know, after scrubbing most of their information from their website, where they were telling us everything they were doing, lesser magic, you know, white magic. They put this Twitter post out, and you can't make this up. In 2023, you'll own nothing and have no privacy, and you'll like it. Seriously, folks, they said that after scrubbing most of their plans on weforum.org. So then they double down and even admit that we're not going to have any privacy in addition to owning nothing. And that's what the central bank digital currency is going to do, folks. You're going to have to take that quantum dot, the mark, to buy and sell. And then they're going to be able to turn off and turn on your source of currency, your source of your medium of exchange anytime you don't comply, be it with a carbon tax credit, be it with your social duty, be it with your hive mind mentality, whatever it may be. So they're doubling down, folks. You really can't make this stuff up. Looking at the clock, and I am running out of time. I have a lot to cover yet. And I have to look for Henrietta. She's not around anywhere. Where are you, Henrietta? Ah, there she is. So it's Coop Talk with Henrietta. And I want to share something with you in terms of prep. Not only do we have to prep for our physical needs, but we have to prep concerning our spiritual needs. My pastor, Todd, shared this article with me from Harry Neuenhoff, 5 Future Technologies the Church Isn't Prepared to Address. So yes, the church has to prep too. Now, this article, 5 Future Technologies the Church Isn't Prepared to Address, was written by one of Kerry's aides, Joe Terrell. And he talks about these 5 things, these 5 technologies that are coming down the pike, and they're going to have an impact on the church. The first one is the all-knowing algorithm. You know, we always kind of scratch our head and say, how did my phone know that? My phone must be listening to me. Well, the truth is actually a lot more discomforting than just, spy software listening in on what you're saying. There's this new gold rush in the internet right now. It's data mining, personal data mining. You know, when you click those terms of agreement on a new app or a website that asks you to accept all cookies and the pop-up, and it's happening more and more now, they are collecting data on you. In fact, Facebook's internal algorithms have 52,000 data points or traits for each user. And similar things on Google. They have 2 gigabyte personal data files on everyone who uses Google. Now, what's this mean for the church? Well, as these machine learning AI systems, these algorithms improve, the church is going to face increasing competition from social media platforms, streaming services, and online retailers in the not-too-distant future, as a fact. This virtual reality, this metaverse, is going to compete against the faith once delivered under the saints to deliver or better engineer or predict or fulfill the felt needs of the people is the rise of artificial intelligence. Now, this is in distinction to this algorithm. And you need the two working together. But back in 2022, artificial intelligence kind of went mainstream, you know. We had AI-generated artwork and profile pictures flooding social media. We know about the bots from Elon Musk over at Twitter. And how about that ChatGPT that quickly became the biggest tech story of the year? You could literally chat with a robot, or you could tell a robot to write a story about peanut butter cookies, and it will. So this is happening all over right now. And to be honest with you, I'm not sure what it means for the church, but according to this article, it's warning that we could have what's known as AI-generated prayer or an AI-generated homily. Heaven forbid, cut the Holy Spirit out. You don't want that. The third one he lists in his article is the sanctity of extended life. Now, we talk about life extension everywhere. Now, there's a little bit of a misnomer in here. The article says that in the 20th century, the average lifespan was 45 years. Now it's up to 77. What they fail to tell you is people aren't living longer. It's babies aren't dying as frequently. And that's how you get lifespan. Suppose 2 people, one dies in infancy and the other dies at 99. Or let's say 1 year and 99. So the average of that would be a 50-year lifespan. If you start to save more and more of those babies from infant death, what's going to logically happen? The average lifespan is going to apparently increase. So they're talking about all this lifespan extension technology. And how are we going to treat it in the church when we are referred to here as sojourners? We're just passing through. The world's not our home. Well, conventional wisdom's telling us that as believers, we should be looking upward and onward. Yet what this is promoting is longer life here and now. Then how about the genetic modifications through CRISPR technology? And we've talked about all the 23andMe test kits and how they solved that Idaho murder going into the database on 23andMe. Well, this is where CRISPR comes in, folks. This is a powerful tool they can use to actually edit our genome and create chimera. And what's this mean to the church? Well, how do you treat a human 2.0? Are they actually even human? Do they have a soul? Do they have a spirit? A lot of questions. And this last one, join us in the cloud. You know, there are actually businesses that claim that they could give you immortality. And wasn't that an episode of The Black Mirror? And how about that whole mini-series or that two-season series on Netflix called Uploaded? They're claiming that they could upload your soul into the cloud. But that's not going to be you, folks. And what's that mean for the church? Well, this is transhumanism, or at least an element of it. And there was an essay written by a woman named Megan O'Gleben titled Ghost in the Cloud. And she revealed or explored the startling similarities of the future imagined by transhumanists and the eschatology shared by so many in the faith. And it's crazy. So just some food for thought, things that we should prepare for as believers. We have to keep moving. And right now, it's time for our Hopium Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepare to get high on Hopium.
Now, I have an article here from Steve Kirsch, and I put it in the Hopium section because he likes to throw out these large bets on all things vaccine. If you've followed him at all, you know what I'm talking about. And then just last week, the second smartest guy in the world, who's also on Substack, wrote an article on how Steve, by doing all this excellent work for the cause of truth, is basically behind the eight ball or blind or in denial. We're not sure because we can't get into his mind on the fact that the vaccines are a deliberate slow-kill bioweapon. I think that's pretty clear now. So the second smartest guy in the world and Steve Kirsch, they exchanged some thoughts after a second article that the second smartest guy wrote titled, Steve Kirsch is Dead Wrong About the True Nature of COVID-19 Vaccines. Will he debate Dr. David Martin and our team? And here was an exchange. Kirsch saw that from the second smartest guy. He said, what's the bet amount? Same terms as my Thayer-Wolf debate. What is the question under consideration? And finally, do you actually have real names? And here's how the second smartest guy answered. One, the bet amount, whatever you want. Terms, the above. And the vaccines, which regard to the question and consideration, well, the vaccines are slow kill weapons. And yes, I do have real names, but I can't divulge them on this platform. So that's how the exchange started. And there were a few more pleasant exchanges. And then the second smartest guy in the world followed up with this text message that his team had been putting together and provided to Kirsch for a tentative list of groups of experts that could debate this. Then after Steve agreed to the terms, the date, and the plan, all they had to do then is lock in the debate teams and finalize a few details. And then last Sunday, Steve and the second smartest guy had their last friendly exchange, and then Steve literally went radio silent. Maybe there's too much pressure. Maybe he dove into it a little bit and realized that he was wrong. Whatever, you know. But think about this guy, Steve Kirsch. He was duped into taking two servings of the Moderna poison. And he was a heavy contributor to the Democratic National Committee, 20 million plus. And he voted for the imposter-in-chief, Joe Biden. And then in a week, remember, this is a blue-pilled normie that's getting red-pilled. And then just this past week, he posts this meme. And it says, SADS, you know, sudden adult death syndrome, because they don't want you to call it what it really is, genocide. Now, just before Steve Kirsch posted this meme, the second guy and Steve had one more exchange. And it was something that the smartest guy sent from one of his debate team experts. And this is a guy named Spartacus. And here's what he sent over to Steve Kirsch from Spartacus. The years and years of weird maneuvering in biodefense, biosecurity, and the tabletop exercises in the decades leading up to all of this point towards premeditation. The patents, funding streams, and the clear relationships and conflicts of interest between the various parties involved are the smoking gun. So I put this in the Hopium Report. Why? Because hopefully Steve has finally woken up to this horrific truth. But only time's going to tell, folks. But let's pray that Steve's change of heart is real and ongoing, because he has a large audience, a large following, and he's going to reach into a lot of these normies, these liberals, these Democrats, whatever you want to call them, that follow him. The bottom line, as always, folks, is do not comply. Now, on the other hand, maybe people like Steve Kirsch and Dr. Malone and even Russell Brand are all false actors. Think about it for a minute. On multiple occasions, when Steve has his million-dollar debate offer and all the people in the know, in the establishment know, reject it, why doesn't he suggest that instead of trying to find somebody that will take his offer, why doesn't he say, well, I'll take that $1 million and hire a team of social media experts who could direct a team of anti-vaxxer volunteers to bombard the mainstream platforms, you know, like Twitter and YouTube and Facebook, people who were maimed or killed by the rat juice. You know, that's a good term for it, isn't it? Just confront them. Use that money to create a social media campaign that would blow everybody away. But he doesn't do it. Or how about some that have suggested that Steve take a few dollars, going to just need a small fraction of that million, maybe $20,000 could get it done, and hire a private investigator to find out whether that nurse who took the jab and collapsed on TV, Tiffany Dover, is dead or alive. Now, if she's dead, that would throw a major wrench into the wheel works of the entire COVID con. But you know the kind of reply we're getting from Steve Kirsch on all this? Crickets. Silence. He went media silent. And now it appears he's not going to debate the second smartest guy. I'm telling you, this is priceless. So I ask you again, my critical thinking listeners, just think for a minute. What is Steve Kirsch's role? Is it just to distract us like you do with a laser light for your cat? Keep us distracted and away from the real purpose of the death jab, which is population reduction? Maybe Steve's role is to promote false narratives that the mRNA jab is all about money and control when it's actually about population reduction. And he's not going to have any discussion on the DOD's involvement because that would be off limit. He'd be opening the Pandora's box, so to speak. Think about it, folks. It's clear now that the DOD is behind all of this. So it's much bigger than just money, because they don't need money. They just print it. It is an attack on our population. Remember, the FAA proved that when they changed the standard for EKGs for pilots. In fact, they eliminated it. Keep this in mind, folks. We know that these leaky vaccines deployed during the pandemic are a no-no. I've covered this time and time and time again. Why? Because they cause mutations, and they stop your immune system from working. They shut it off. And all the while, they're not stopping transmission, hospitalizations, or even death. And then they're insisting on these endless series of boosters. And then you've got that Paxlovid or whatever it's called on top of it all, fueling the mutation fire. And let's not forget, what was all of this to begin with? COVID-19? Basically a flu No more lethal. Remember, we had no elevated death levels during the entire scamdemic until the jab comes out. Why would they do all these things? Population reduction, folks. And Steve won't go there. So might it be that he's handled by a government team and he's controlled opposition like so many others? You know, I can give you similar stories about Malone. And I can tell you similar stories about Russell Brand. You know, Malone's suing Dr. Bregan right now. There's infighting. And Russell Brand, he's buddies with Noah Yuval Harari. You know, the guy that's telling us that Jesus is the of all fake news. The guy that tells us our future is going to be essentially a prison planet. The guy that's telling us that they don't need us anymore. That's Russell Brand's friend. But think about it. We have to keep moving. And right now, it's time for our Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life mimics theater, but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
You know, just when you think there's no further absurdity that could come out of the mouth of the imposter-in-chief, Joe Biden. Remember, he had his red speech last year where he basically declared war upon all of us patriots. Well, just this week at the Martin Luther King breakfast, Biden threatens conservatives and says, if you want to take on the federal government, you're going to need some F-15s. You don't need an AR-15. Have a listen.
And ban the number of bullets and go in a magazine. There's no need for any of that. I love my right-wing friends who talk about the tree of liberty is water with the blood of patriots. Give me a few need.
What? Are you serious?
Can I have some more coffee?
Yeah, I'm serious, Paul. You interrupted JoJo. So let me finish what he said, Paul. Because, you know, this tyrant just threatened we the people. He said, I love my right-wing friends talking about how the tree of liberty is watered with the blood of patriots. If you want to take on the federal government, you're going to need some F-15s. You don't need AR-15s. That's what Joe Biden said. Folks, the best way to take on tyrants like Joe Biden and the federal government is to stop the election fraud. Then the imposters in chief like Joe Biden wouldn't even be there. Now, right now, as I speak, this rogue regime is neutralizing the threat of 220 million gun owners in America. How? Through the use of this bioweapon, this death jab, contamination of our food supply like we just heard earlier, geoengineering, you know, these storms that are happening. Al Gore was at the Davos meeting last week, and he talked about the rain bombs. That's what they hit us with on the West Coast or the left coast. Weather warfare. And don't even get me started on the 5G death beams and their newfound ability to unleash scamdemics whenever they want. It's all absurd, folks. And it's all coming to a head, as in the days of Noah. But we have to keep moving. And right now it's time for Ken's Corner, spelled with a K.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
So, folks, last week, or maybe the week before, I shared a quote with you from author Hannah Arendt. She was a Holocaust or Holoscam survivor. She lived from 1906 to 1975. I'm going to read her quote. And I read this to you once or twice before, but have a listen. Men have been found to resist the most powerful monarchs and to refuse to bow down before them, but few indeed have been found to resist the crowd. Stand up alone before the misguided masses, to face their implacable frenzy without weapons. I first heard that quote many years ago, and it reminded me of this passage from the Bible. St. Paul wrote this to the Corinthians in his second letter, chapter 10, verses 3 through 5. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. So there's this hive mind, this Borg mind, so to speak, that is controlling the mass mind, the hive mind. And then they use that hive mind that's under their control to attack you and me. It just happened this week. Did you hear about the Philadelphia Flyers NHL player, Igor, how do you say his last name, Borovov, refusing to do the warm-up before the game with his rainbow shirt? He said, I'm going to stay true to my faith, and I'm not going to do this. Well, then there was this media meltdown, and the radical sports media all over just started to bash him. It was the worst meltdown that I think I've ever seen. And the worst of it all came from this reporter, this NHL reporter named E.J. Heydrich. And he said that Borovov should just return to Russia and fight the Ukrainian war for refusing to cave to the radical left mob. Just have a listen to this 43-second rant.
And Ivan Provorov can get on a plane any day he wants and go back to a place where he feels more comfortable, take less money, and get on with his life that way, if it's that problematic for him. And he's been in North America for a long time. He played in the Western Hockey League. He's now been in Philadelphia for many years. If this is that much of a problem for him to maybe assimilate into his group of teammates and in the community and here in this country, that's okay. Listen, you can feel any way you want. But the beauty is, if it bothers you that much, there's always a chance to leave, go back where you feel more comfortable. I understand there's a conflict of sorts going on over there. Maybe get involved. So,
Wow, can you believe that? Do a little mental exercise for a minute. You know, Philadelphia had the Super Bowl, Philadelphia Eagles, and they also have a superstar on their basketball team, the Philadelphia 76ers, Joel Embiid. He's an African from Cameroon. Could you imagine if a reporter told him to go back to Africa? That reporter would have been fired on the spot. And there would have been this national media coverage conveying the mindset of that reporter to be nothing short of KKK. It's crazy, isn't it? Now, this guy, this E.J. Heydrich, isn't he the same guy, one of the same journalists who criticized and chastised the Christian quarterback Tim Tebow when he'd take a knee to pray before the games? Remember that? That goes back a few years. And then didn't this guy turn around and celebrate the BLM knee takers? And then more recently, didn't he celebrate all the prayers who were kneeling and praying around the player for the, who was it? The Buffalo Bills? Hamlin? Yeah, that's the same guy. But what's he all about? Well, he's demonstrating groupthink. Folks, this is the way it works. The establishment hires these hacks who are compliant sock puppets, and they use them to advance their agenda, which includes demasculinity, the end of the nuclear family, pushing the eating of bugs, or like they did with Martha Stewart, pushing the jab. How about when they promoted the 15-minute cities? In effect, no travel. Remember that? We played it last week, I think, where you'll have managed heat and rainbow transsexuality and everything in between. This is the sort of stuff, and oh, so much more that WEF has planned for us, we the people, and that's why we need to stand up and say no. I told you that meme they put out last week. In 2030, not only are we going to not own anything, we're going to have no privacy, and we're going to like it. We have to keep moving. It's time for Back to the Future. The segment where we take something from the past and bring it back to the future. So let's wind the clock back, folks, way back to 12,850 years ago, to what's called the Younger Dreyfus Age. It's a time period. Now, there's a hypothesis associated with the Younger Dreyfus. Now, they can't deny that. That was a time of global cooling. And at this time, the sea levels were actually 400 feet lower than today. And there's this Younger Dreyfus theory out there. It's a comet theory known as the Clovis Comet Hypothesis. And it's an alternative to the long-standing and widely accepted cause of this cooling on a global level, which was due to the shutdown of the North Atlantic Conveyor, you know, the Gulf Stream, so to speak. And that was in response to a sudden influx of fresh water from, I guess, the collapse of this lake, Agassiz, and what they call the deglaciation of North America. So then it got cooler, I guess, huh? But this theory, known as the comet theory, impact hypothesis, correlates a layer that's found all around the world of an elevated platinum level, supposedly coming from the comet impact or the comet tail impact, where there were multiple impacts around the Earth. So there's this layer all around the Earth which has an elevated level of platinum. And this patent impact theory that's promoted by the Comet Research Group and others promotes this. And yet the mainstream's scared to death over it. Remember, I told you the sea levels were 400 feet lower back then, 12,850 years ago. So let me ask you a question. What if everything we know about prehistoric humans is wrong? Well, there's a guy out there asking that question. And you know who his name is? Graham Hancock. Now, he's not an archaeologist. He's a journalist. And he's traveled the world over. He's written multiple books on it. Now Netflix is doing a special on it. And it's become the second most popular show on Netflix. And it's titled Ancient Apocalypse. And I'd like to play for you the 33-second, there it is again, the 33-second Netflix trailer. Just have a listen.
Did you know that you were picking a fight with academia? Because there's a lot of people that just don't want to hear this.
You have been at the front of the line for decades, and you exposed me to a lot of these controversial ideas that have now been substantiated.
Well, I'm Graham Hancock. I don't claim to be an archaeologist or a scientist. I am a journalist, and the subject that I'm investigating is human prehistory.
So Terry and I watched this. It's about 7 or 8 episodes. Don't quote me on that. But in each of these episodes, what Graham does is he goes to a different site around the world, and there are 8 episodes. And I'm just going to briefly summarize the 8 episodes. The first one is called There Was a Flood. And you know, we have in the Bible the Noahic Flood. And all across the world, there are these flood stories. And he explores them. And they're all around the world. The second one, he looks at some of the ruins, the Great Pyramids of Mexico. And then the third, he talks about the megalithic temples on Malta. And now as he's doing this, he's showing that they all have some sort of correlation to stars. And then you have to look at star charts on computers and see when the alignment was appropriate for whatever these temples claim to be aligning to. And wouldn't you know, they go back 12,850 years. And then in the fourth episode, he talks about the ghosts of a drowned world. Remember, the sea levels were 400 feet lower. and the Bimini Road and some ruins off of Japan and other places around the world in the Mediterranean are actually above sea level. In the fifth episode, he talks about the legacy of the sages. And there's the oldest ruins ever found in Turkey. And again, a star alignment facility or complex. But you have to turn the clock back. And these ruins align to certain constellations 12,850 years ago. And when the alignment got off, they would rebuild the ruins on top of it and realign it. So a couple questions come up. Why don't the mainstream archaeologists support this? Now, how did these people, these cave people, have the technology to do all of this? Not only build these monuments, for example, the Temple of Jupiter that was covered in one of his later shows has some 100-ton foundation blocks that are perfectly cut. You can't even put a piece of paper between them, let alone lift them. We don't have lift technology today to elevate these things. So how did the ancients do that? Don't even get me started on the Great Pyramid, folks. So he has eight episodes, and it has just taken the mainstream by storm. They're scared because their lying narratives that we basically have 6,000 years of recorded history is falling apart. How does this apply to the news today, folks? And we can do show upon show upon show of just this, and perhaps we will. Email me if that would be interesting. Davos 23 meeting. John Kerry makes this very peculiar statement. Have a listen.
And when you stop and think about it, it's pretty extraordinary that we, select group of human beings, because of whatever touched us at some point in our lives, are able to sit in a room and come together and actually talk about saving the planet. I mean, it's so almost extraterrestrial to think about, quote, saving the planet. And if you said that to most people, they think you're just a crazy tree-hugging, lefty, liberal, you know, do-gooder, whatever, and there's no relationship. But really, that's where we are.
Did you hear that, folks? It's almost extraterrestrial. Well, it is. It's the hive mind that the book of Revelation talks about. You know, in Genesis 6, we hear that God looked down from the heavens and decided he had to destroy man because there was only one pure man left, and that was Noah. So everything that we're seeing today, from the global warming lie to the sea level rise. Think about it for a minute, folks. 12,850 years ago, the sea levels were 400 feet lower. So if you divide 400 feet by 12,850 years, you get 3/8 of an inch sea level rise per year. Now, over the time period of the Industrial Revolution where these globalists are claiming that we're just polluting the world with CO2, the sea level should have risen about 65 inches if we continued on this same level. But we haven't seen any rise. Take a look at old pictures from the 1850s, 1860s of Plymouth Rock. And take a look at today. The sea level's the same. The same thing goes for the Statue of Liberty, Ellis Island, all these different landmarks that have been photographed over and over and over. And there are historic areas over in England. Same story. Look at some of the old photographs that were done on the glass plates back from the 1850s and 60s. And then look at a picture done today. There has been no change in the sea level since the onset of the Industrial Revolution. And isn't that the narrative of the globalists who want to save the earth? Control. More control by the baddies. You know, the Canaanites and all those different ites that God told his people to destroy. The same people that were infecting bloodline of Jesus Christ, leaving Noah and no one else as a pure blood. Now, we can tie this all into ominous parallels today. And you know that you can actually see this in what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 24, verse 37 in the King James, where he says, "But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." So I hope you keep listening, folks. as we get into a relationship between the times of Noah and the correlation it has to what we're seeing today all around us, which make me think that we're literally on the precipice of the second coming of Jesus, because of the signs, I'm telling you, they're all around us, from the world's secular philosophy to its sexual perversion and everything else in between. So, you know, one man asked another man once on the street, do you know what the two biggest problems in the world are today? And that other man replied, I don't know and I don't care. And the first man said, you have both of them. So the two greatest problems that I see with the normies today, folks, with most of the masses, the blue pill in the world today, is ignorance and indifference. Now, there are people waking up. And I'm telling you, folks, there are some things that we cannot and should not and dare not be indifferent to. And one of them is the second coming of Jesus, also known as the end of the age. Now, it's true that Jesus said right there in Matthew 24, before that verse I read, that no one knows the day and time, and that's the truth. But you can see signs of the time. These are like the days of Noah. So I believe history's coming to a climax. His story is coming to an end. But it would be wrong. In fact, it's bordering on blasphemy to set a date and time. So if somebody's telling you they know exactly when Jesus is coming back, run. Yeah, we can look at the age, and this is the age. This is the season. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's next Thursday at 2 o'clock. First of all, I can't say that because I don't know that. And secondly, and more importantly, Jesus said, you won't know that. Only the Father knows. No one else. Jesus said in verses 35 through 37, heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. But of the day, he's referring to his return, his second return, an hour knoweth no man. No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. So here Jesus contrasts the fact that we don't know the day and the hour. And then he goes on in verse 37, which I've already read twice, the beginning of the show when I opened this up. But as the days of Noah were, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. So he's contrasting the fact that we're not going to know the hour and the day, but we can recognize the season. He said it's going to be like the days of Noah were. So also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. And here's how he explains it in verses 38 and 39. He says, for as in the days that were before the flood, and we just talked about that in the Back to the Future segment, the Younger Dreyas period, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and they knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. So what were the people of the world doing then? Well, the same thing they're doing now, folks, eating and drinking and marrying and being given in marriage. This is just an indifference, you know, just going along to get along. And that phrase, they knew not, that speaks of their ignorance. So just like that man in the street, didn't know and didn't care, condition that plagues humanity. I don't know and I don't care. So these two major problems, these problems of ignorance and indifference, they're going to mark the last days when Jesus returns, just as they did during the days of Noah. Now, to understand what the days of Noah were like, we have to look at chapters 4, 5, and 6 of Genesis. And we're going to see some things. There's actually about 7 you can get out of there, and we're going to cover 4 of them today. And the first one you're going to see is there was a lot of secular philosophy during this time. Genesis chapter 6, verses 5 and 6 read, and God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts and hearts was only evil continually. And it repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. Now, this word imagination used here comes from the Hebrew root word that means to fashion as a potter would fashion. So they were trying to mold society by philosophy. Sound like the critical theory of the Sabbateans? There's this Bible scholar named Dr. Phillips that says, men fashion wicked philosophies, espouse filthy causes, made fashionable vile sins, and endeavored to pour society into their mold. And isn't that what today's New Age philosophies, actually age-old lies made new? or doing? You know, even today, think about it. The Bible translation committees and even some radical preachers at the pulpit. I'm talking denominations founded by Bible believers like John Wesley and other men like Martin Luther and John Calvin, but they're no longer holding the faith or preaching the faith once delivered under the saints. Today, they're teaching strange doctrines. They deny the inerrancy and preservation of the Bible, and they mock the blood atonement, and they don't recognize the lordship of Jesus Christ. These are all abominations, just as they were in the time of Noah. But there was a second mark in the days of Noah, scientific progress. Come on, let's face it. We just talked about these big rocks at the Temple of Jupiter and the pyramid. They didn't use logs and ropes to move these things. They had levitation technology. They had advanced technologies, and I believe it came from the fallen angels. So they had scientific progress. Folks, incredible men, men of renown with incredible strength, both mentally and physically, offspring of the fallen angels and daughters of men. The Bible says in Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in unto the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, and the same became mighty men, which were of old men of renown. These were the Nephilim, folks. Now, our biased public education system denies all this. Our scientific establishment denies all of this. And why? Because if they didn't, we would have more faith because the Bible would be validated. But the truth is that just as today is a great age of scientific achievement, so was back then. In Genesis chapter 4, the Bible says, and Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch, and he builded a city. So they had great cities. Plus, there was an industrial revolution. Genesis chapter 4, verse 22 says, and Zillah, she also bore Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every artificer in brass and iron. So this was an industrial revolution, folks, pre-Noahic flood. They were into metallurgy and making tools and machinery. Just look at those great pyramids, like I said, are the foundations of some of these temples. The precision of the stone cutting alone, let alone the placement, cannot be reproduced today. So they had these urban centers. Remember the Tower of Babel. And they had industrial revolutions. So man, who had been driven from paradise because of his sins, was now trying to create an artificial paradise of wit, wisdom, and fire. He was building his own technological paradise. Sound familiar? Now, how about when God instructed Noah to build an ark? This was an engineering marvel. It was 450 feet long. That's longer than a football field by 50%. Plus, it was 150 feet wide and 45 feet tall. It was a three-story vessel. Now, boats built today, and the sailors who sell them tell you that this is the perfect proportion for a lot of the large ocean liners that carry all the containers. So Noah's Ark was built with specifications and engineering discipline that was strong enough to withstand the greatest storm ever recorded in history. And it was recorded, folks. Now, the fact that this cataclysm, along with so many others that wiped out humanity and traces of these advanced civilizations, was depicted to be sometime more recent than 6,000 years by Bishop Usher. That's doing a great disservice to the faith, folks, because it was probably three times what Bishop Usher said, three times longer ago. And there are some remains, pre-flood remains, like the Great Pyramid and the Temple of Jupiter, that remain to this day. Now, sure, people come in later and build upon those. That's what the Egyptians did. Just think about our day and age. I can go back to my grandfather, who I knew rather well. When he was a child, cars were just coming into vogue. Most people still had horses and buggies. When he died, the world had achieved in splitting the atom and so-called space flight. So in our lifetimes, we've seen men walk in space and some say on the moon. And we've had all this stuff happen over the last 100 years. And I'm telling you that it all happened once before, prior to this great cataclysm in the days of Noah, known as the Younger Dryas Age. And that theory is very interesting. That's why I featured that in the Back to the Future segment. And perhaps we'll do more in the future. So many today are being mesmerized by scientism and not true science. And that's what the archaeologists are doing, the mainstreamers. They come in and gather up all the dinosaur bones when they find them and whisk them off to the Smithsonian. You never see them again. Mesmerizing people by their pseudoscience. And that's so sad, because today we've lost the ability to be surprised. We've become jaded. Don't even get me started on the genetic engineering. We talked about that in Coop Talk, something the church better be ready for. Or how about CERN and the search for the God particle? Are they opening the abyss with CERN? So just as the days of Noah were days of secular philosophy and great scientific product progress, the days of Noah were also just plagued by social issues, just like we have today. So the truth is, they didn't reach utopia. They had all that scientific knowledge, all that philosophy, but it didn't turn into good. In Genesis chapter 6, verses 11 through 13, we read that the earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. So just as today, back in the days of Noah, there was great violence amongst the people. And think about today. We've seen generation after generation that lived through war after war after war. I mean, I talked about my grandpa. He lived through World War I and World War II. My mom was born at the beginning of World War II. She's buzzing about World War III, although Zelensky at the Golden Globe Awards said, there's no World War. Balderdash, folks. Albert Pike back in the 1880s, I believe it was, prophesied about it. And you can read about it. It's out there. You can read Pike's letter to the occultist from Italy named Mazzini. I'm telling you, today we live in a day where there are daily wars, rebellions, upheavals everywhere around the world. We read about election fraud and government corruption and guerrilla warfare, financial terrorism. And don't even get me started on this pseudo war in the Ukraine with all of its needless murder and assault. Sure, there are people dying, and it is violence, but it's not a true war. And then look at our murder rates and organized crime. You know, there's big business in crime, and now it's actually sitting in the White House. The Bible says in Genesis chapter 4, verses 23 through 24, and Lamech said unto his wives, Ada and Zillah, hear my voice, ye wives of Lamech. Hearken unto my speech, for I've slain a man to my wounding and a young man to my hurt. If Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 70 and sevenfold. In other words, what he's saying is, I got in a fight and I killed somebody, but he wounded me. So here's a man who was eaten up by a spirit of revenge. And he's actually picked out as an individual and memorialized in the Bible in Genesis chapter 4, which I call the chapter of the baddies, giving us an example of so many who are filled with this spirit called violence and rage. Yet sadly today, most of us live behind closed doors, bolted and locked doors. You know, we're in our little cubes at night watching what the TV wants us to watch being programmed. I'm telling you, the social engineers have done a good job. They told us that if we could only relax about sex, that's what Freud said, we're too uptight about sex. If we could just loosen up on sex and stop making everything that's deviant in the realm of sexuality a crime, violent crimes against women and people in general would go away. But that hasn't happened. It's actually at epidemic levels today, folks. We've been told that we're too tough on criminals and we should relax and go easy on them. Well, how's that working? No, we've been told that our churches are just too old-fashioned. We have to modernize and liberalize and create the New Age church, you know? How's that working for Hillsong and so many others? You know, Terry and I watched this, I think it was an Amazon movie last night, about a mega church preacher and his wife who got caught up in a sex scandal. And when he tried to revive the church, it was a flop. That's happening around so many places today. And that's a byproduct of the spirit of the age, folks. So please pray for the leadership of the churches. They need to awaken to the lateness of the hour. You know, we've been told that we don't need prayer in the schools and that we should take the Ten Commandments off the walls and use value clarifications as a substitute. And, you know, we've got the core, common core now, and critical race theory. They want us to say, thus saith the mind of man, instead of thus saith the word of God. You know, we've raised up a generation or two now, flattered, dumbed down by the intellectuals, and undisciplined in their emotions. Think about all the mayhem we have in the schools. We have children now identifying as cats that get litter boxes in the nurse's office to go to the bathroom. That's the truth. It happened in a local school district here, Burrell High School. It might even be in the news. Plus, there's a group of people out there telling us we need to legalize drugs. God have mercy on them, folks, just as in the day of Noah. Our society today is becoming unraveled. Isn't this insane? The Bible says in Genesis chapter 6, verses 1 through 2, and it came to pass when man began to multiply in the face of the earth and daughters were born unto them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives of all which they chose. So today we're having this destruction of sexual morality and one man, one wife. Just as they did back then, they took wives, multiples, a multiplicity of wives. That isn't God. That's man's vain philosophy. Remember Lamech, the man who looked worse than his predecessor, Cain? He had two wives. Genesis chapter 4, verse 19. Remember I read it? God's plan was one man, one woman, till death do they part. But man came in thinking of polygamy. And today, we're seeing so much juvenile crime and broken homes, and I can go on and on and on. Don't even get me started on abortion. You know, it's sick. Macabre. Does this upset you? Are you surprised? Well, you shouldn't be. So in the days of Noah, we saw all of these things, you know, from their vain philosophies that we see today as critical theory, spawned by the Frankfurt School, descendants of the Sabbateans, just like we had in the days of Noah. And then we have the scientific progress. And then I just talked about the social plagues. And let's wrap it up with the sexual perversion. In verse 5 of chapter 6 of Genesis, God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. So this verse doesn't mention how sick that imagination was. But over in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus gives us further insight where he talks about something very interesting. And he links the days of Noah to the days of Lot. And he shows us that in the days of Noah, which came before the days of Lot, we also saw some great sexual perversion. Luke chapter 17, verses 26 through 30 reads, "And as it was in the days of Noah, so also shall be in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives." Wives, plural, folks. "They were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. Likewise, also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, and they builded. But the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed." So not only are we going to have the global catastrophe like Noah experienced, but we're going to have the fire and brimstone rain down from heaven like Lot saw. So Jesus now links the days of Noah to the days of Lot. Can it get any worse, folks? How does God feel about sin? Well, he absolutely detests it. And you don't have to guess on this. All of this perversity with these alternative lifestyles is an abomination to God. It says so in Leviticus chapter 20, verse 13. If a man also lie with mankind as he lieth with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them. So that was the day of Noah. That was the day of Lot. And that is the day of today. And God says it's an abomination. But despair not, folks. Because Jesus Christ is our anchor. He's our life raft. He's our ark. And all you have to do, put your hands up in the air and say, and save me, Lord. Help me. Deliver me, Lord. All you have to do. And, you know, I'm compelled to talk about the last three correlations next week between what we saw in the days of Noah and now in the days of Lot and what we're seeing today. So we'll pick this up next week, okay, folks? But right now, because I'm out of time, and remember, as you stand on the rock, Jesus Christ, fully surrendered and fully empowered by the power of the Holy Spirit, do what Winston Churchill said and never give in.
Never give in. Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in. Except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
And I have this clip. I've played it a few times on here in the past. It's done by a very powerful worship leader named Misty Edwards. And it's called As in the Days of Noah. I love you all, folks.
Ticking by, and I can feel an explosion inside. And time, time is ticking by, and I can feel an explosion inside. As in the days of Noah, as in the days of Noah, though we drink. Marrying, laughing, as in the days of Noah. What a fool, they say, to build a boat on sand. What a fool, they say.
Do you really think that he's coming? Come on, let's just get real. But remember this first, that many, many, many scoffers will come. And when the rain starts falling, it's too late. It's too late. And when the rain starts falling, it's too late. It's too late.
As in the day. It's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained before.
But one day, 2 days, 3 days gone by, and time, time is ticking by, and I can feel an explosion inside. People get ready, Jesus is coming. And many, 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 many scoffers will rise in that day, and they'll say, it's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained before. It's never rained, rain, go away. It's too